This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. North Carolina continues its longest legislative session in 18 years. State lawmakers trudge around the budget impasse with piecemeal spending measures. Governor Cooper has signed off on raises for most state employees, but public school teachers and some state university and community college staff are still waiting. Meanwhile, many recent qualms over redistricting may have paved the way for redistricting reform. WNC's Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri has the latest. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Anita.
So everyone in Raleigh is really tired because the standoff has been going on for a really long time.
Accurate.
Bring us up to speed. Where are we on the budget? We have a dozen of these mini budgets. So what major components are still left on the table?
There's a lot that is still on the table. Of course, the full state budget that was passed by legislators back at the toward the end of June was vetoed by the governor. That's 4 months ago this week. So what was a $24 billion budget has effectively hung in limbo. And over the past 4 months, they have chipped away doing these mini budgets or these smaller slices of that bigger budget pie. They've done a dozen of them or so, a couple more are moving at this point. But aggregate, it's still it's only maybe 10%, roughly speaking, of that full budget. So we're talking about just a little bit of money that has been allocated going into this new fiscal year that's already a third over, or more than a third over. As a reminder to listeners, there was a state law that kept previous spending measures in place, which is why we haven't had a government shutdown. Of course, the big issue, or one of the biggest issues, is Medicaid. We'll set that to the side here because that really hasn't had a lot of traction and hasn't been something that has moved forward. One of the other very key principled issues here are raises for teachers, and that is something that could amount to as much as about $5 billion, depending on how much is appropriated for teacher raises. So where we stand right now is that there have been a lot of these mini budgets. A lot of them have been over non-controversial things. We've drifted toward an area that is a little bit more controversial, including teacher raises. And that's because when the legislature approved a budget, it allocated a 3.8% raise for teachers over 2 years, so a little bit less than 2% each year, collectively 3.8%. The governor wanted 8.5%. So there has been no agreement on that to this point. Lawmakers have said they're going to go home next week, and we're expecting to see a bill, another mini budget, in the next 7 days that'll deal with raises for teachers. But first, the House and the Senate have to come together and figure out some kind of agreement. And then, presuming that it does go on to the governor, we'll see if he signs, vetoes, or lets it become law without his signature.
And is there still momentum around overriding the original budget? We know the House had a surprise override last month. The Senate has not yet held a veto override vote. Is that still expected? Is that likely?
That's right. So in North Carolina, you need 3/5 to override legislation. And in the Senate, if the Senate is at full capacity, 50 senators, that would require 30 votes. So there are 29 Republicans in the Senate. They only need one Democrat to break with them in order to override the governor's veto. We're also dealing with a situation where one of the Democratic senators is up for a nomination to the State Utility Commission. His name's Floyd McKissick. He's from here in Durham County. If he were to go to the Utility Commission, which could happen as early as mid next week, it is possible that the Senate would be able to convince a Democrat to either vote with them. They would need one to vote with them, or one to, as we say, quote unquote, take a walk. That would give them the requisite 3/5 because it's 3/5 of the members present. So I think an override is still on the table. In talking to some lawmakers and staff members, there's a little bit of reluctance, or there has been reluctance, to do an override because it was done so controversially in the House. The Senate doesn't want to take that approach, but it is something that's still on the table and something that we could see in the next week.
Okay, let's talk about maps. For the first time in years, lawmakers had a serious discussion yesterday about reforming how they draw voting districts for congressional legislative seats, all happening on the same day that there's this pretrial hearing and the latest lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the state's district. So what is the likelihood of redistricting reform, and are legislators open to giving up some of their control in the process?
I throw my palms to the sky because it's a great question, but are lawmakers going to give up this inherent fundamental power that they've had since the beginning of North Carolina? And there sure seems to be a lot of hesitation from a lot of powerful Republicans. I guess I would note two things quickly. Tom Tillis, now U.S. Senator, former Speaker of the North Carolina House, said something interesting to me a couple years back. He said, you know, this really interesting thing happens. When you're in the minority, you support independent redistricting, as he did when he was a minority member of the North Carolina House. And then when you reach the majority, it's awfully hard to wrangle enough support and wrangle enough votes to detach yourself from this thing that allows you to keep drawing electoral districts that provide you with a seat and the ability to have power going into the future. So that is one thing. I'd also note that an independent redistricting measure actually was approved by the Republican-led North Carolina House in 2011 before it died in the Senate,
right? Yeah.
So I think there is a chance that there were three bills that were up for discussion only yesterday that they could get a vote and perhaps further deliberation moving forward. And as you alluded to, there's also all this litigation. Listeners will remember there was the successful lawsuit challenging the partisan nature of legislative maps. So those were redrawn earlier this year, just within the last month. Now there's a challenge on the table. And effectively what happened in court yesterday, plaintiffs' attorneys asked judges to halt congressional maps because they said by in lieu of that recent decision pertaining to legislative maps, it's now law in North Carolina. It's literally law that extreme partisan gerrymandering is illegal.
Right.
So they want to stop the congressional maps. So more to come potentially on congressional maps in the weeks ahead.
All right. Excited to have you here to walk us through it. Jeff Tiberi, WNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. Thanks so much, Jeff.
You're welcome.
While the budget continues stalling in the legislature, criminal justice reform has received some bipartisan support. Republican Senator Danny Britt, who represents Robeson and Columbus counties, is sponsoring bills that automatically expunge some criminal charges and loosen mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines for many drug-related charges. Senator Britt, welcome to the State of Things.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. So the First Step Act, which passed the Senate earlier this week, is modeled on federal legislation of the same name that was passed last year. It gives a judge some permission to reduce the sentence of someone convicted of a drug offense and lets those currently serving time for drug-related offenses file for a motion to reduce their sentences. You were a co-sponsor of that, as well as the Second Chance Act. So why are you and other Republicans behind these two pieces of legislation, and why now?
Well, I will tell you, if you look back, whenever I first was elected, and I was first elected back in 2016, I actually had legislation passed through the state Senate that essentially does the same thing with low-level traffickers. So it's not just now. This is something that many members in the Republican General Assembly have had a passion for, at least going back to the time whenever I first came in the General Assembly. We also made major tweaks to expunction law. Since back whenever I came into the General Assembly. So I have a criminal justice background. I'm a former prosecutor. I'm a defense attorney. I've worked on both sides, seen both sides, understand both sides, and understand the fact that many folks who are getting trapped in mandatory minimum active sentences for low-level drug trafficking are folks who simply have an abuse problem and a mental health problem. And we're incarcerating those people, and we're not actually helping them find a solution to that problem that got them there in the first place.
Well, looking at that, I mean, there is clearly an intersection between it being a public health issue and a criminal justice issue. There was a 2018 study out of UNC and the Divisions of Public Health and Safety that looked at how former inmates were 40 times more likely to die of an opioid overdose than someone in the general population. So addiction clearly really lies at this intersection. What support do you encourage for reentry programs? Is that legislation that's important to you?
It is, and we did fund reentry quite a bit. We increased, I can't recall the exact amount, we increased reentry funding, but we did increase reentry funding in the most recent budget that was vetoed by the governor. And, you know, in working on the defense side and working on the prosecution side, I see a lot of folks that if they had more opportunity coming out of prison would be less likely to recidivate, would be less likely to go back down that same path of that revolving door in and out of the prison system. So I see a lot of value in the reentry program and getting folks to be beneficial members of our society who are working, who are paying taxes, and who do not feel that they have only one option, which is to turn back to crime.
As someone working on criminal justice, it's clear that North Carolina's prisons are really struggling. There's been a lot of assaults by inmates. Number of prisons have closed as part of staffing issues. So beyond expanding funding for public safety, what kind of reform do you think is needed to help our struggling prison systems?
Well, we're looking at several different things. I also serve on the Prison Select Reform and Safety Committee in the State Senate. One of the things that we're looking at is possibility of a step system for correction officers. We're also looking at breaking the Department of Adult Corrections away from the rest of Department of Public Safety. You know, we're really thinking outside of the box on trying to recruit and retain correction officers. Last year, there were close to 1,800 who were hired, and around 1,600 who left. So we're trying to stay ahead of the curve the best we could. We did have a good bonus package and pay raise package in the most recent budget in the JPS section, which was vetoed by the governor. But we still know that there's more that we need to do to try to prevent the staffing issues that we're having at the prison. It's not a problem that just developed in the last 10 years. This is a problem that has been going on for decades and decades. We did a lot during the last long session by increasing that floor of what those employees make. The floor had always been $24,000 for incoming correction officers. We increased that floor by almost $7,000 to $31,000, which greatly improved the quality of life for many correction officers who came in. And, of course, that's a problem that has been going on for decades that within the last 4 or 5 years we've really started to try to tackle.
All right, I have to leave it there. Republican Senator Danny Britt, who represents Robeson and Columbus counties and is the co-chairman of the Appropriations on Justice and Public Safety Committee. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for having me.
Just ahead, we will talk with Nora McInerney, who calls herself a reluctant expert on grief. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.